everyone. Welcome to Construct Talks. Today it's myself, Sarah and Wes, and we're talking to Mike Mansell at Numeric Payroll. And today we're talking everything tax and compliance in Switzerland, and depending on your circumstances, the best net retention you're going to be getting in Switzerland and how to be compliant through that process. So let's get into it.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
Hi. Good morning, Sarah. Good morning, Wes. How are things?
Not bad.
Not bad.
Yourself?
Good. Yeah, it's a rainy day here in Switzerland.
Grey Manchester. Exactly the same, grey Manchester, same. So today, this is for our Construct Talks podcast. Myself and Wes from Construct are with Mike Mansell from Numeric Payroll, who are one of our partners in Switzerland. And today we're talking everything all Swiss tax and compliance and working there as a contractor. Mike, it'd be good to hear from you. Just a little intro into yourself, please.
Yeah, great. So I used to be a recruiter back in the day for SAP specialists. And then I kind of slipped into the payrolling thing about 10 years ago. Just over 2 years ago, we launched Numeric Payroll. We felt that there was a space for an actor that focuses on service, because a lot of our competitors they'll do you the salary simulation, send it to you, and then let you deal with all of your administration, when actually arriving in Switzerland as a foreigner, having to navigate the landscape, finding health insurance, opening a bank account, getting your work permit, those things, benefit from the help of somebody who's done it all before. And so I'd say throughout my career, I've helped more than 1,000 people move to Switzerland. I'd say more than 80% of them are still in Switzerland, because it's a nice place to be. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, we've grown the company. We've got 270 contractors at the moment. We're an internal team of six people at the office. And today I'm working from home so that we can have some quiet for this podcast. Mm-hmm. That's me.
It's a thing, that, isn't it? Like lots of people I speak to have never left Switzerland. Like, they just seem to have a really good retention rate of contractors.
Yeah, it's an attractive place to live. It's according to The Economist, it's one of the most affordable countries in Europe, which is counterintuitive, but in fact, it means that.
That's not what I think of when I think of Switzerland.
It's of the money that you make, how much of it can you dedicate towards savings? And in Switzerland, there's a higher percentage left at the end of the day for savings than there is in neighboring countries. Just and apart from that, the climate's good, the trains run on time, it's clean. The weekends, you can go skiing in the mountains in the winter, or you can go swimming in the lakes in the summer. So in terms of quality of life, it's really, I'd say it's unparalleled.
Just to understand, Mike, who is the service for, to your service? Is it for freelancers, contractors, employees? Like, how can you break down what is the perfect person that kind of uses your service?
Yeah, so there are clients who approach us and say, Mike, here's John's phone number, he starts on Monday, his rate is 100 francs an hour, make it happen. We also have the contractor who calls us. And depending on their status, if they have their own limited company and they're delivering their services from abroad and they're only in Switzerland for a short period of time, then we can intervene as well. And then there are people who don't have their own limited company and who don't want to deal with paying all the social contributions, insurances, pension, taxes themselves. And they approach us and say, I've got an assignment. The rate is 100 francs an hour. You know, what do I get? What's left, and explain to me how it works.
Yeah. So. And with, obviously, Construct especially, we don't always deal just with like Swiss nationals. A lot of our contractors are from all parts of the EU and the UK, obviously, since Brexit. Obviously, since Brexit, it's really difficult to get the UK candidates in. You know, what would be, if I was an EU candidate trying to get, been offered a job in Switzerland, talk me through the process of working with yourself, like, and it would be good to know, like, kind of like net retention, if we just say we work on 100 euros an hour to the candidate, how does the process work with you, and kind of like, what kind of money could they look at saving, after they pay all the taxes and everything compliantly?
Yeah. So it depends. Everyone's different. We have 26 different cantons in Switzerland, 27 even. And each of them have their own kind of tax at source structure. So there are some of the cheaper cantons. If you end up living in Zug or in Schwyz, then you're going to pay absolute minimum taxes. If you end up further west here in Geneva, Bern, Valais, they tend to be the more expensive cantons in terms of tax. Yeah. Numeric, we have two offices, one in Zug and one in Zurich. That means that when somebody arrives in Switzerland, we can apply the tax at source for them in one of our cantons, which are the cheaper ones, for the first 90 days. So until they register for a longer term work permit, they can enjoy a lower taxation, which is great, because when you arrive, you probably have to pay the deposit on an apartment. You've got some furniture or some personal effects that you need to move. So your setup costs are a little bit higher in the beginning, and we can offset those by taxing you at source in Zug or in Zurich.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Just to throw in a question there, Matt, before you continue, what kind of decides on where the tax is sourced? So I know, I assume it's going to be like the location of where your maybe address is. So
that's
does that
right.
mean technically you can stay in any canton and work somewhere out of the canton, or do you need to be working and living in the same canton? So like, let's
no.
this, does it need to be Valais, or can you live in Valais and then work in another area?
Yeah, so a lot of people who work in Valais, they actually live in Canton Bern. The taxes are marginally different. There's probably 2% in it, but they just prefer to, you know, commute through the Lutschberg tunnel to get to work. And some people live in Ticino and they commute to Valais from Ticino. So it's actually where you live, that's where you pay your tax. So it's where the commune that you register at as your living address, that's the canton where we have to tax you.
Okay. And then how does that work for like a breakdown of costs? So again, using what Sarah said, the 100 euro as an example, deductions roughly, I know it's flexible, but you can explain that on what makes it flexible.
Yeah.
Deductions come off that.
So I'd say a ballpark figure is around 65% net retention. So that's if we have 100 euros at the top or 100 francs at the top, we deduct all the employer side social contributions to arrive at a gross salary. And then from the gross salary, we deduct the employee side contributions and the tax at source to arrive at a net figure of probably, let's say, 60 in our example. And in addition to that, everyone contributes to the second pillar private pension. And that 90% of that contribution goes to savings. And that those savings look after you when you retire. So if we add those savings back to your net salary, that's where we get the net retention of around 65%. But that's a ballpark figure. We can also if the person has children, if the person has a dependent spouse, that's going to reduce their tax and increase their net retention.
Yeah, and if they have got like a dependent spouse and say one or two children, that can go up quite significantly, can't it? The net retention to nearly like 70, if not even a little bit higher, I've heard.
That's right. Yeah. So it depends on the number of children and whether the spouse works or doesn't work.
They better be getting married then, right? Getting some kids. Getting better net retention, Switzerland.
I don't know if that's the most lucrative decision, but in terms of net retention, certainly.
It's trade-offs.
Yeah.
Does religious status?
Yeah. So in Switzerland, the upkeep of the churches was the duty of the state. And there are Protestant and Catholic churches. And so previously, by default, everybody had to contribute to the upkeep of the churches. And some people said, well, we don't use the church. We don't feel that we should have to contribute. And so there was a waiver introduced. You could either choose to contribute or not contribute. So now, by default, you don't contribute unless you say, I'm a practicing Catholic or I'm a practicing Protestant, in which case you kind of, we change your tax code in the payslip and we... pay that contribution on your behalf. If you choose not to pay it, but then you do decide to get married in a Catholic church, the taxes can come after you and say, hey, you're benefiting, but you're not contributing. So from now on, you are contributing to the church tax.
Okay. You said a second ago about pension. Is the pension like retrievable if you move from Switzerland? So let's say if you were completing a short engagement for 6 months, is it retrievable when you go back to your home country, or does it stay in Switzerland?
Good question. So there are three, if you've been contributing for less than a year to the Swiss second pillar private pension system, then normally you can write to them and say, hey, I'm leaving now. It's been 10 months. Can I have my money, please? And they'll pay it out to you. If you've been in Switzerland for more than a year, then your second pillar pension stays in Switzerland. And there are three ways that you can recover it before retirement. You can either start your own company, but I started my own company and I discovered it's not the right kind of company to use your second pillar pension for. So that one's a little bit tricky. You can use that money as a part of the down payment for a primary residence. So if you decide to buy a house in Switzerland, then you can use, or you can either you can liquidate your pension and use it to pay down to pay the deposit, or you can pledge it. You can say, look, I've got 50 grand sitting in my pension. If anything happens to me, then the bank can use that to, to pay off a part of my mortgage. And then the third reason why you might be able to take the money out early is if you leave Switzerland and if you leave the EU. So if you move outside the EU for good, and that now includes the UK, then you can ask for your pension to be withdrawn early. The downside of doing it is that you saved it tax-free. It's sitting there accumulating marginal interests, compounding over the remaining years of your working life. Whereas if you withdraw it early, you have to pay a withdrawal tax, which is around 14% in Zurich, which is where our pension fund is based.
Okay. And then the only other deduction on top of that bar, obviously external and reductions, which would be logistics, accommodation and other things, is health insurance. And obviously you don't technically provide health insurance, but it's a part of the cost that we factor in when we're explaining to someone what the cost would be. What's your understanding on roughly how much costs are at the moment? Like, what would you advise someone?
The only thing that we can't take care of on your behalf is health insurance. That's because of discrimination rules. They don't want your employer to know which kind of cover you've opted for, because it might lead to discrimination. And so health insurance is left completely separate from your employer. We do have a broker who's really, really versed in which cantons offer which insurances at which rates. So I'd say a ballpark figure for somebody in their 40s arriving in Switzerland, depends again on the canton that they're going to be living in. But I'd say if you budget 300 francs a month for your basic health insurance, then that's a good amount. There are different levels of coverage. So the health insurance kind of works. You can either pay a low premium, but then you have a high deductible, which means, for example, I've opted to have a low premium. That means the first 2,500 francs per year of medical bills, I have to pay them from my own pocket. And after that, everything is covered by the insurance. You can choose to pay a higher premium and have a lower deductible. And the other extreme is that you would only pay the first 300 francs per year of medical bills from your pocket, and then the rest would be covered by the insurance. But insurances are like casinos. They always win. In my view, it's better to pay a lower premium. And then, if you get sick, then have some money aside for that kind of occasion.
What's the situation at the moment with permits? So can everybody get in, or is there a barrier to entry for certain people?
Yeah. So so long as you have a Swiss employment contract and you're a European national, then you're entitled to a work permit. There are quotas on the numbers of permits that they give, but those quotas are higher than the amount of requests that ever arrive for EU nationals. So, there's no issue for an EU national to get a work permit, so long as they have a work contract. And typically what we would do, you've seen it yourself, Wes, someone needs to start on Monday. Well, that's not enough time for us to, you know, go through the whole application for the work permit. And besides, we don't even know where they're going to live yet. Probably they'll be in an Airbnb or in a hotel for the first couple of months. So in that case, what we do is it's called a 90-day registration. We register the person for 90 days. That gives them time to, you know, get familiar with where they're going to be working, find some accommodation, discover the public transport routes to get to the office, and so on. And then once they found a place to live, then we recommend that they, well, then they have to go and register for a work permit at their local town hall, which is called a Gemeinde or a Kommune in French.
And probably the question I get asked most often, how does that impact a fellow Brit?
That was my next question. Yeah.
How does that work for a British national at the moment? We know from, we understand from our side that it's not impossible to get a permit, but it's very, very, very difficult for someone that's outside the EU to get one. Is that, do you agree with that? Or do you have a different stance?
That's right. So there's this single market for free movement of labour. And after Brexit, the UK disappeared from that kind of mechanism. That means at the moment we can still get a 90-day work permit for a Brit, either by employing them ourselves or if they invoice us through their limited company. Because if they stay less than 90 working days per calendar year in Switzerland, then they continue to pay their social contributions and taxes in their home country. So all they need to do to prove to us is that they have, I need the name and address of their limited company. I need to see that they have business liability insurance that adequately reflects the contract that I have with the client. And I need proof that they pay their social contributions in their home country. So that's a registration of national insurance for a UK company. Or even better is that they complete an A1 form. The A1 form used to be called the E101. It's a form that's used by all the social insurances in Europe. And it says, this posted worker is paying their contributions in the UK, so they don't also have to pay them in Switzerland. And so long as they fulfill those three criteria, then we can do a subcontracting agreement with their foreign company.
That's for 90 days, though, yeah?
Yeah.
What about when obviously a lot of the contracts, especially in construction, they're 6, 12 months plus. So for a UK or an out-of-EU citizen, once you get to that 90 days, how easy is it or difficult is it to get that permit for longer?
Very difficult. They make it difficult on purpose because they need to protect this agreement that they have with the EU, which is that it's considered a single market. There's free movement within the EU, but not from outside. It's a protectionist measure. And what they do is they make it very difficult for an employer to justify. In fact, if I was to hire somebody from outside the EU, I would need to prove that there's nobody in the EU that can do that job, which involves posting advertisements for the job online for up to 6 months, rejecting every candidate that applies with a justification, providing that list to the immigration authorities and saying, look, this is the proof that there's nobody in Europe that can do this job. And even then, we don't know if we're going to get the work permit. So unfortunately for non-EU nationals, particularly as an employer in the temp sector, applying for work permits is for non-EU nationals is a non-starter for us.
Yeah.
Okay. However, the 90-day work permit does allow 90 working days per calendar year. So if we just count the working days, that almost makes up like 4.5 months. So if they were to apply now with the 15th of October, well, we could immediately get them on board until the end of the year, and then we could get them on board for another 4.5 months into mid-April next year.
But that's with knowing the contract wouldn't extend or wouldn't be needed for longer, because usually that would mean that someone else would probably be better in that position. But yeah, it's good to know. Okay.
But if the job permits some of the work to be performed remotely, well, every day worked from abroad doesn't count towards the 90 days. So if they're on site, I don't know, 2-3 days a week, then we can pull those 90 days and stretch them across the year.
Okay. Is there a cost to the permit? Either side, EU or non-EU?
So the 90-day work permit, we take care of it for our employees. For our subcontractors, they have to take care of it themselves because there are some questions in the form which are about their company, which we have no business asking them. But we can gladly jump on a Teams call and, you know, guide them through to answer the questions. And then the cost of the work permit itself depends on the canton. Normally, it's somewhere between 60 and 100 francs. And normally, if you're employed by a temp sector employer, you get an L permit, which is limited for 12 months. If at the end of the 12 months you're still employed, well, then you get an extension. And if after two L permits, two full 12-month L permits, you're still in Switzerland with the same employer, then you get a B permit. And a B permit is valid for 5 years. And each one of these permits, every time you go and renew, costs somewhere between 60 and 100 francs, depending on the canton. And what some people choose to do, because Switzerland is kind of sandwiched between Germany, France, Italy, and Austria, a lot of people are daily commuters. So if their site where they're working is in, you know, Basel or Geneva or somewhere near the border where they can plausibly cross the border each day, well, in that case, they get what's called a G permit. And the advantage of a G permit is that previously, you used to have to pay the tax where you delivered the service. So that would be in Basel or in Geneva. Now they've changed it and said it has to be where your employer is based. And since we're based in Zug and in Zurich, we can apply the tax at source rates for Zug and Zurich for our cross-border workers. And so long as they don't have to pay tax in Germany or in France as well, that can work out very, very well for them. So I know, Wes, you have a couple of contractors who cross the border each day into Aargau. We've employed them through the Zug entity so that we absolutely minimize their taxes and thereby maximize their net retention.
Just about to ask that question.
Yeah.
Glad you mentioned it.
And then how would that person know, the contractor know, if they're living in Germany and crossing into Switzerland, how would they know? Would you advise them on what taxes need to be paid in that country, or do they have to go and find that out themselves?
They have to find that out themselves. So we're very knowledgeable on Swiss payroll, Swiss social deductions, and we're compliant with the tax at source in Switzerland. But we don't know the German system, the French system. It keeps changing. We can't be good at everything. No. So we do recommend that they get advice in the home country.
So you recommend it for them. You say, like, we don't know that. You go away and do that. Sort that out. Just so they've got a full...
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So your aim, Mike, really is to be a one-stop shop for everything once the man or the woman is at the point of taking the job or has took the job. So you do everything from permits to set up to the middle part, which is compliance. And then is there anything you do during that contract or towards the end of that contract that they need to be offboarded, something like that? Like what happens in the middle and towards the end?
Yeah. So let's start with the onboarding. So John has just won his assignment in Switzerland. He's going to be an employee of Numeric. He's going to go and work in Aargau, for example. So we send him a link to our portal where he can upload all of his private information. We need all sorts of things, you know, his banking details, the name of his next of kin, just in case something happens. We don't want to be caught. Called up by the hospital and told, who do we call and not have the answer. Social security number, if they've ever worked in Switzerland before, their address, so that we have something to put on the contract. All of these details, they upload them into our portal. It's fairly self-explanatory. And then once they've done that, we generate the contracts. So we send a service agreement to the client and we send a work contract that reflects the same conditions to the employee. We do that through Adobe Sign for a digital signature. So there's never any need to print and sign and scan anything. We're in 2024 after all. Don't need to do that anymore. Then they start work. They complete a timesheet at the end of each month, which they upload to our portal, and they can approve it online. So they just put the email address of the manager. He or she receives a link with a green button and a red button. to approve or reject the hours, and also a link so that they can consult the actual Excel sheet or PDF that was uploaded as well. As soon as they click approve, we automatically send the invoice. That's now fully automated. And we pay the wages within 2 business days. And we publish a pay slip, a compliant Swiss pay slip on our portal, and they get a notification to say your pay slip has been published. And as soon as they see that message, the smile arrives because they know that within 48 hours, they're going to see the money appear on their bank account. So that goes on for, let's say, 12 months. And then at the end, if there's no extension, then the contract expires naturally. And we'll write to them a month ahead of time and say, you know, is it likely that you're going to be extended, or is this really the end? And the contractor themselves are going to know, because they speak to their manager every day. They're much more aware of what's going on site, to let us know if we should be waiting for an extension and preparing some paperwork, or whether actually the project is over and it's time to go home or find a new assignment. In which case, yeah, the offboarding is very simple. They receive a letter from Swiss Life, which is our pension provider, saying, here are your vested benefits. What do we do with them? And if they continue employment in Switzerland and through another employer, they'll also receive a welcome pack from the new pension fund saying, where can we go and pick up your vested benefits? And then you just put the information from the Swiss Life envelope into the new employer's pension provider's envelope, send it off, and then the capital gets moved so that you're not always contributing to different pots, different pension pots.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's it, actually. The offboarding is very simple.
Is there, to kind of wrap up, is there anything, how would you like package up Numeric service in, like how would you highlight how Numeric service is different than maybe other providers that do the same thing? I know you mentioned service at the start, but like what makes Numeric different? Why would you use a Numeric over another provider?
And can I say maybe from the candidate's perspective and the client side as well would be really good to know.
Yeah. So from the client side, the client doesn't want to employ the person directly, because if they're seen as the employer, then they might have to pay all the social contributions on top of the 100 francs that we talked about earlier, as opposed to them being included in the 100 francs. So that's why the client is keen to use a payroller to make sure that there's a compliant salary payment to the contractor, and also that the contractor has an employment contract. So he can never argue, well, I was employed by the end client, because in fact, he wasn't. He was employed by Numeric Payroll. So there's a step, an intermediary, let's say. That's the advantage for the client. The advantages for the consultant are that they don't need to take care of all of the social insurances, pension, tax themselves. And in terms of service, what we provide is we're simply available. Every contractor that I work with has my WhatsApp. If they have a small question, they can ping me a WhatsApp. If it's a question about, I don't know, timesheets or contract renewal, if it's a small question, night or day, they can send me a WhatsApp. And I might not answer them immediately, but I'll definitely get back to them within 24 hours. And I'd say that's what really differentiates us from our competitors. It's a low bar, but we are always available. There's WhatsApp, there's Teams, there's email. And there's always a dedicated contact person. So a contractor that I onboard will always be dealing with me. Someone that Henri onboards will always be dealing with Henri. If we, you know, occasionally we go on holiday, in which case we might get the other person to reply. But you can be sure that within 24 hours you have a reply. And that's what we consider service.
Good. How many people are in the business at the moment, Mike?
So we're 6 people internally. Henri and I, we do the sales. So we talk to the consultants, we make the contracts, we deal with the onboarding and answer all the questions. Then in the back office, we have 3 people in finance. We have Dorothée, who's the, let's say, the CFO. And she has Remy, who's in charge of invoicing, and Thomas, who's in charge of finance. So let's say accounts receivable and accounts payable. And then we have Alexandra, and Alexandra is the admin queen. She knows all about work permits. She knows all about unemployment when it comes to accident insurance, or if someone falls sick and they're unable to work, making a claim on the loss of income insurance due to sickness. Alexandra is, she's the boss on that.
She's the woman. Yeah.
Well, good. One more question now.
Then I'm good as well. Thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate your time, and it's really explained how the benefits of Switzerland and working with you guys. So, yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you both. And if anybody ever needs a salary simulation for their specific situation, please feel free to pass on my contact details and we'll get back to them within 24 hours.
Of course. Amazing. Thanks.
Good to chat, mate. Cool. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.